Good evening, this is Jim Kozlik with the Men's Network Radio on KGVM 95.9 on your dial, or you can stream us at kgvm.org. And once you stream us, you would just go to the program directory and click on the Men's Radio Network, or else there's a button to click on. And you could start the show. It's from 7 to 8 p.m. every Thursday evening. Our guest tonight is Matt Kelly, and he is another member of the Mankind Project. We've already had a couple members on previous shows. Good evening, Matt. How are you?
I am well, Jim. Thanks for inviting me to join you for this discussion.
Oh, great. I've been reading some of your newsletters that you sent out. I happen to be on your mailing list. And this last one talked about the hero's journey, and I was wondering if we could get a little introduction about you. It was pretty interesting, a little bit about your career, and then how the hero's journey, maybe what that means, and then how that's affected your life.
Yeah, thanks. I've had a varied career that started out in software, back in the 90s, automating the export process for manufacturing companies and traveling about 150 days a year. And I could tell you all kinds of stories that would make it seem glamorous and exciting. And the truth is that it was a grind to travel 150 days a year and live a life that was sort of moment by moment of whether I would be traveling or at home. And I think that comes into the hero's journey because we often pretend that things are different than they really are, that they're better than they are. So I pretend sometimes that things are better than they are, and I certainly look at other people's lives and say, oh, well, that must be excellent. You know, they must be great. They must be wealthy, happy, doing exactly what they want. And I think a lot of us, and I certainly did, live with a resignation that I was being called forth towards one thing and I was doing something completely different than I was. And that in a lot of ways is the role of the hero. So the hero's journey has a variety of distinct phases, but the big three are separation, ordeal, return. So the hero leaves their ordinary world. And to do that, the hero always resists the call. And so I spent a lot of time resisting the different calls that I heard of different adventures, different hero's journey. So we have to leave our ordinary world, our ordinary understanding, and we go through some type of ordeal, physical, mental, emotional, perhaps even spiritually. And then we come back to our world as the master of two domains, the master of the world that we've left. We're all living with mastered life and stayed alive in some way. And then we come back with new insights and new information about a new world, about ourselves, about how we interact. And then we do this pattern over and over again in our lives of resist, separation, ordeal, return. And Joseph Campbell mapped these out into 17 or 18 different phases of the hero's journey. And Star Wars is the classic movie that was written almost step by step through that long list of steps of the hero's journey.
Well, that's fascinating because I've been doing some research and reading through the years, but just lately about how family lineage or ancestral lineage. Some people like call it the tribe effect in our psychology, and how if you go back to your dad and the grandpa and grandma and everything that influenced your life up to a certain point, it sounds similar to what you just said, how you separate yourself from that whole family lineage. And we'll get into, I think later on in the podcast, I want to get into our unconscious mind and how, because all that settles in that unconscious mind. And so this is fascinating how you mentioned the hero's journey. I think I could relate to it in that format, with family or ancestral lineage. So, and speaking of that, you're doing the hero's journey, and you're in a group. Is that correct? Are you in a men's group?
I do. I've been sitting in a men's circle for a little over 11 years now, since I did the Mankind Project's New Warrior Training Adventure in May of 2008. Immediately after that, I started sitting in a Mankind Project circle called an I group. The I stands for integration. So integrating the insights from the New Warrior Training Adventure into our lives. So your listeners, you probably, and I've certainly done workshops where I've thought, oh, this is the best thing ever, whether it's work related or personal. And I think I'll never forget this. And 2 weeks later, I can barely even remember that I went to the workshop, let alone any of the details. And so part of the real power of the Mankind Project is peer facilitated men's circles, that help me remember and continue to integrate bit by bit, the insights that I had on the New Warrior Training Adventure, as well as the continued growth and insights that I have by being willing to, you know, look at what's going on in my life, what my thoughts are, what my actions are, and continue to grow.
Well, on that note. Probably there's quite a bit of my audience that men don't even have a clue what you're talking about with warrior training or even being in a group. And it's I just got done reading a comment by a woman in a blog, and it says it's what she finds, it's amazing when she finds like two or three or four men getting together and just really getting in depth with each other in a small group, how once the women are gone, how they can get into some of their deeper emotions and feelings, and it's just amazing how they change. And I'm wondering, I see that in the group I'm at, you know, we go through our stuff in the group, but outside of the group, how do you find yourself relating to other men?
At various levels. So oftentimes I reference moving in and out of the sacred and the profane. So, you know, sacred space, being inside the circle oftentimes, and profane being outside of. And it's not limited to inside the circle either. So sometimes I'm deep and introspective and thoughtful, and sometimes I'm, you know, our interactions are light and jovial and joking and surface level. And so it's a little bit of going deep and then coming up and going deep and then coming up, and it's that that in and out of conversation and topic that I think helps really solidify a group. And it doesn't happen to have to be moment by moment and bouncing back and forth, but the ability to move in and out of deep introspection and not take myself too seriously has really adjusted my relationship with men. Previously, as a as an athlete and or former athlete, and I enjoy football, so conversations would oftentimes revolve around sports or watching sports, and they'd stay at a surface level, and they were less than completely satisfying. And then I started to do some interpersonal work, begin to understand myself better, and I was able to have more authentic, vulnerable conversations with men, as well as with women, and yet only staying in that deep, authentic, vulnerable space would become tiresome as well, becomes exhausting as well. And so the fluidity of conversation is important to me, because I'm both, authentic and vulnerable, and I'm also, I like to laugh and have fun and poke fun and see the absurdity in life as well. So that's also part of who I am.
Yeah, and I have to agree. As we go through our work and create this new us, it's so pleasant to be able to do it with humor also.
Yeah.
And be able to laugh at ourselves. You know, we can't take ourselves so serious in this life. You mentioned as part of the hero's journey, and I was reading a little bit in your newsletter, and you mentioned something about your shadow career.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the shadow? Explain a little bit what you mean by that.
Yeah, the concept of shadow is a Jungian term. So Carl Jung, the psychologist, brought forth that term. And shadow means that in myself that I hide, repress, and deny. So oftentimes there are beliefs about ourselves that we hide, repress, and deny. One of my shadows is that I'm stupid. So, I'm dyslexic. It was hard for me to learn to read. School was difficult. I got my last D my junior year of high school. That was the last time I got a D. But that's a long time to have, failed and almost failed classes. And so I took on this belief that I'm stupid, and I have an undergraduate and master's degree in business, and I've graduated with honors both from undergrad and grad school, and so I have all kinds of contrary evidence, but really that belief that I'm stupid persists with me. And we all have those beliefs that I'd rather not talk about, that we'd rather not mention and say, and we might not even be fully conscious of them either. I'm not enough is sort of a universal shadow. I'm not good enough, smart enough, strong enough, fast enough, rich enough, fill in your enough. Overall, we're not enough. And if we can conquer that one, Brené Brown says, well, then the next one we're going to flip to is, well, who do you think you are? Who are you to be, brilliant and fabulous? And so we all have these beliefs. They largely emerge out of the wounds of our childhood, the emotional wounds of our childhood. So I live with those beliefs. And then, when those shadows drive my life, they can also end up in having me be in a career that would be considered a shadow career. So it's largely driven by the unconscious beliefs that I hold, that are largely holding me back from my own brilliance.
Well, that is, I believe that wholeheartedly. I'm really big on the unconscious mind, and I know that's what I've been working around, because those kind of thoughts, that's where they hang out. And
yeah.
So it's up to us to reprogram that mind, and it sounds like you've been able to do that. I'm curious how you did that, going through your degrees and everything and through college. How did you manage to uplift yourself?
Yeah, college, graduate school, all of that, my success there was largely the time it took to retrain my brain, focus, find purpose, and to realize that I am intelligent, and that while I did struggle in some subjects, some of them came more easily, and it was really sort of just a maturing in my educational process that led to success there. But of course, having believed that I'm stupid, and now seeing concrete evidence, I began to rely on that expectation that I am smart, to my own detriment. Anything that becomes any tool that I use exclusively can ultimately can become a burden as well. So that's sort of the educational side of things. Where I started to get conscious about my shadows was through the Mankind Project. And the way we do that, because people who are listening might be thinking, well, if a shadow is something that I hide, repress, and deny, well, then how do I become conscious of that? And so within the Mankind Project, we look at the agreements we make and don't keep as a portal into understanding our shadows. So we call the process accountability. What we do is we look at an agreement we've made and not kept. So we've broken an agreement. And then we look at, what did I choose to do instead of keeping the agreement? I made a choice to do something else. If I said I would meet you for coffee at 6 o'clock and I show up at 6:30, I did something different than keeping the agreement. I broke the agreement. I might have fallen asleep on the couch. I might have not accounted for traffic. I might have stayed at work late. There's almost an unlimited number of things that I could have done instead. And breaking our agreements has an impact. It impacts on the people that we care about most. And then there's also consequences to me and each of us when we break an agreement. And so the question we ask is, what's the belief? What's the shadow that would allow me to choose to break my agreement rather than keep my commitment? So, it could be, if I were facilitating a man who said he'd made an agreement to be faithful to his partner. Well, what did you choose to do instead of being faithful? So he might say, I cheated on my partner. I had an affair. And we'd look at what's the impacts and consequences of that. And then what's the belief? What's the shadow that would allow this man to be unfaithful to his partner rather than keeping his vow to be faithful? And through this process, we uncover those shadows and become aware of them. Another way that we can do this is the more expanded definition of shadow is that myself that I hide, repress, and deny, and project onto others as their motivation for why they do things. So when I look at someone who does something, and I say, well, I know why they do that. They do that because they believe that they're they're entitled and the rules don't apply to them. Well, I have no idea, Jim, what you think and what you believe, and I don't know what most people think and believe, especially if they're just walking down the street. But I make up a story about them, and I make up stories about all kinds of people, and we, each of us, does that. And it's really a reflection of our own internal belief system. So there's part of me that believes that I'm entitled and that rules don't apply to me. And we can each look at that by saying, well, what's the story I'm making up about this person? Why do I believe that they did that? And most of the time, the story that we come up with is what we really believe about ourselves in some way, in some situations.
Sure, I really believe we're mirror images of each other. And the old saying, if you point a finger at somebody, there's three pointing back at you.
Mm-hmm. And the term spot it, you got it. If I can see it in you, it's probably in me.
Yeah.
So we often think about the negative, but so is the positive. If I can see that you're a brilliant, powerful man who's going out on a limb to start a radio show about a topic that you're excited about and passionate about, and I can see passion and excitement and a willingness to take a risk in you, well, that means that it lives in me. I can see that in myself. And so each of us can see positive and negative in each other.
Yeah, I think the great word for that is inspiration. We inspire each other.
Right.
So if we get back to this, what we talked a little bit earlier about with the unconscious mind and where some of these old behaviors lurk, do you in your group, so you have a lot of wisdom, so you get some new people in the group, and do you do like I am statements to help change the thought pattern, or how would you assist somebody in... or direct somebody in, hey, you've got an opportunity here to change the way you're behaving. What can you do to do it?
Can you repeat that question that you cut out a little bit?
Okay, so I'm thinking of these behaviors sit in our unconscious mind, and they come up, and then we behave a certain way, whether we feel entitled or you know, cheat on somebody because of something that we did way back when. Now, we want to change this behavior. So how do you advise somebody to change the behavior? Do you, with I am statements, like I am faithful versus... Do you see where I'm going with that?
Yeah, I do. So affirmations can be powerful. Might create an affirmation. Oftentimes accountability as well is a challenge to keep our agreements, to do whatever it takes to keep our agreements. I just finished leading a Mankind Project leadership program this last weekend, finished up on Sunday, and that training is called The Burdens and Blessings of Leadership. And the 7-week follow-on to that is a whatever it takes program. So high accountability. So we make and keep our agreements. And so if a man were looking to change his behavior, I would ask him to find an agreement that is the opposite of his shadow. So if his shadow were, I'm not worthy of love, and what he had identified with it drove him to infidelity, then I would ask him to find an action that does make him feel worthy and commit to that. So might look like man says that that singing makes him feel worthy. And so my challenge might be to him, well, you know, could you sing tomorrow? Could you make a commitment to singing tomorrow? And could you make a commitment to singing at least three times this week and noticing how you feel afterwards. And so so we commit our way into and act our way into a new way of being and a new way of thinking. We can't really think our way into a new way of action, but we can act our way into a new way of thinking.
Oh, I like that. That is, I really like that. That really hits home, because action is what it takes for all of us. If we don't act on our thoughts, forget it. We're not going anywhere.
I mean, how many times have you, and I'll certainly say me, how many times have I broken an agreement and then said I'm sorry? Like, oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And an apology doesn't do any good. What are you sorry for? No.
No, but if I make an act of service, if I commit to an action that helps me see that I can be counted on and helps me get back into relationship with the person who I broke the agreement with, then I'm moving forward. So I'll use this past weekend as an example. So like lots of trainings, there's a in lots of organizations, there's a release form that I have to sign every time I'm on a Mankind Project training. And I was on a training 3 weeks ago, and I had one this past weekend. Well, I thought I had signed the release, put it in my folder, and that I was bringing it as I had agreed to this past training this last weekend. Well, on Friday, when someone said, "Hey, Matt, do you have your agreement?" I said, "Sure." I opened up my folder, went to the place in my folder where I keep signed agreements, and nothing there, because I'd forgotten to do it. I thought I'd done it for that training, and I hadn't. So I went through the accountability process, and I committed to a simple act of service, an action that would pierce my shadow, so that it would counteract my shadow, teach me, remind me that I can be counted on, and get me back into right relationship. And so I made an agreement with the two men, one who I had an agreement to give the release to, and another man who had asked me as the leader, "Hey, can I just email my release form in?" And I said, I told him in advance of the week of the training, "No, you can't. You have to print it out and bring it." And then I showed up there without mine. So I agreed to get a meal for each of these men during the weekend. I would serve them in some way. Ultimately, I ended up choosing, when we went out to dinner, to buy their dinners, as a way of saying, "Hey, I can be counted on to remember to do what I said I'm going to do. I said I would be of service to you," and a way to get back into right relationship with them and say, "Yeah." Instead of saying I'm sorry, I committed to an action that I hope brings us closer together, rather than continues to drive us apart, as my unconscious behavior did. So that's a little example of how that works.
Yeah, that's beautiful, because you could really carry that forward into your personal relationship with your partner, with your mate, with your wife.
Yep.
So instead of apologizing, you know, "I'm sorry that I raised my voice to you," or whatever, now we could actually commit to our partner that, "Okay, this is, I raised my voice to you. How did it make you feel?" You know, okay, and then receive from them the type of effect you might have had on them, and then commit to changing your action.
And it's not a license to break agreements and bring flowers. That grows very tiresome. And my hope is that our partners will call us out on it if I say, "Well, you know, I said I'd be there to pick you up from work on time, and I was 30 minutes late because I was hanging out with my friends having a beer, and I'm late," and like, "I'll just bring you flowers." Like, "Yeah, you know, that works once, maybe. The next time, it's like, well, you know, your actions, my actions aren't in alignment with what I say I want and who I say I want to be as a man.
Well, I got to share with you, just doing this interview, we had a time picked out. I took down the wrong phone number. So now I'm scrambling. And I'm sitting there and I'm saying, well, looks like that's not going to happen. And I could have just blown it off. Next thing I know, I find myself calling the 800 number for the Mankind Project. Well, there was no response there. So luckily, I still had Boyson Hodgson's phone number. And I texted him right, or left a message for him to get your phone number. Well, I was one digit off. But rather than just blow it off, you know, and then write you a little text message or email later, say, gee, I'm sorry, Matt, but I misplaced the number. I took the action, a positive action, towards making this work.
Mm-hmm.
So I do apologize that I might have been a little late, but I think we gave ourselves a 15-minute leeway. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, we were able to do that. And I can see the humanness in a mistake as well. So part of this is also not about like forming some sort of club that we get to bludgeon each other with, but rather some way that I can learn from what it is that I do and how I show up in the world and get to see and think about the impacts that I do. And so, you know, if we were sitting in group, you know, I might say, hey Jim, what could you do next time to make sure that doesn't happen? And you might say something like, well, what would you say if I said, hey, how could you make sure?
I would have you repeat the phone number 3 times and then read it back to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great.
Or have my hearing aids in.
You know, the one that was on the top of my mind when I asked the question is, you know, I could commit to call my guest 24 hours in advance to remind them that we have this call. One, it brings it to the level of consciousness for my guest, as well as I get to test out the phone number. But repeat it 3 times is certainly adequate protection to make sure that we have that. So there's lots of different ways that we can be proactive in being more accountable as well.
Well, I agree with that. You know, in fact, I'm glad that you brought that up, because typically that's what I like to do is connect with a guest, at least 3 or 4 days prior to make sure we're on and confirm. And I didn't do that with you. I relied on my, to be honest with you, I relied on my calendar, my iPhone calendar. I heard it beep earlier today, and now I'm scrambling. I'm, oh my gosh, I got an interview. And I never confirmed with you that the interview was still on. So I will commit to do that from here on in with future guests. And thank you for bringing that up. That's a great example right there. That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's a wonderful tool that we have at our disposal. The full definition of accountability that I use is I'm willing to tell the truth about my choices and take responsibility for the impact of my actions, whether intended or unintended. I'm willing to tell the truth about my choices. Mm-hmm. So just being honest and then take responsibility for the impacts that I have in my life, whether I meant to do it or not.
That's beautiful. You know,
it's the little boy who swings the belt around and hits someone with the belt buckle and then says, I didn't mean to. And so I don't really want to show up in my life as the little boy who's swinging a belt around.
Or, there you go.
You know, however I'm, you know, impacting the people around me.
Yeah.
And still sometimes I do.
Well, and we do, and then we get back to that unconscious mindset. And in fact, on your newsletter, you referenced this NPR podcast, The Hidden Brain.
Yeah.
Recall that? Did you listen to that? I haven't had an opportunity to listen to that.
I did. I'm a pretty regular listener of lots of podcasts, but also, but especially the Hidden Brain. And, the episode that we're talking about is Guys, We Have a Problem: How American Masculinity Creates Lonely Men.
Yes.
And so, when, you know, when we believe that, vulnerability is weakness, asking for help is weakness, we end up, alone because, there's nobody to call or ask for help. And, we begin to be isolated. So, yeah, it's a very good podcast episode.
Yeah, do you recall the facilitator of that podcast? He was talking something about our behavior and choices and in relationships from the unconscious shapes, I think he called them.
Yeah, the three things that I'm recalling from that podcast is. Is that, you know, the first is that, that distractions can't replace our need for connection. So each of us has a need for connection. And as we move out of, especially school settings, where we have lots of opportunities to interact with, acquaintances and friends, we move out into job and family, and we become more and more socially isolated. I can be distracted by sports or work or all the busyness of being part of a family, and we end up I can become isolated. The other is that strong relationships make for better health. So, you know, spending time building and nurturing friendships is as important as exercise and eating right. So much better off to go for a run with a couple of friends. You know, even though I might not run as hard as I would if I went to the gym and ran on a treadmill all by myself, or if I ran by myself, but, you know, exercising and getting connection and social connection together is sort of the best. And then the other piece is that there's a belief, you know, especially in our U.S. society, that close emotional bonds between boys and men, you know, as boys or as men, really means that we're gay. And so, with a culture of homophobia, men are often reluctant to form strong emotional bonds with other men for fear of being seen as gay, which is homophobia. The fear of being seen as homosexual, and that helps contribute to this social isolation. And so, those are the three takeaways for me from that podcast.
Okay, I like that. You know, even a couple things I just want to cover. In regards to what you just said, so as we grow older, and we see friendships kind of go to the wayside, you know, for instance, we're moving different parts of the country, and some of our old friends are no longer there. We lose touch with them or acquaintances, and so I think there's a big risk that we can take with our new way of thinking. And going out and connect with a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
and make that connection and not worry about, you know, what kind, how that might affect either them or us, but take that risk and make that connection with fellow men. And even for when we get into that homophobic subject, as men, we need to look at each other as men, and we might take on different relationships, but still we're men that have a past history that we're still trying to work through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're in a culture that that unfortunately sees men who are, and people who are gay, as less than, as, you know, as is true with, you know, racism and classism and sexism, and it's to our own detriment to be in a culture that believes that, and lots of work being done. And I think it's incumbent upon me and each man to do his work around, the isms, you know, sexism, racism, classism, homophobia, and the list goes on. No shortage of work to be done.
So that takes me into the next area I'd like to cover with you. In your groups, do you guys ever take on specific topics like the Me Too movement, or what you just mentioned, personal relationships with females, or, you know, sexual drives and how we can change that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We oftentimes do, the man who will be leading a group will pick a theme for the evening. That could be, this time of year, it might be something as sort of, every day as, or every year as, what are we going to do next year? What are we going to do in 2020? What are we going to accomplish? Like, let's not just make a New Year's resolution, but let's get really clear about what audacious thing we might do next year. A couple years ago, I put forth that topic in Circle, and one of the men said, I'm going to write a book. And so he wrote the book that he'd been meaning to write, and he accomplished that. We might look at the Me Too movement. So we might look at sexism. So, you know, how do my sexist beliefs impact the women around me? How do I act out from a sexist perspective? So look at that. It could be sexual shadow. That's a topic we've delved into. So as shadow also comes into career, it also comes into sexuality. Within our culture, there's two things that we don't talk about. We don't talk about sex, and we don't talk about money. And if we're going to talk about one of them, we're going to talk about sex. So what part of my sexuality might be in shadow? How might my shadow beliefs and the cultural norms, impact my relationships, my sexual relationships? Where does pornography come in? Where does objectification of women come in? Where do I deny aspects of my sexuality? So delve into that. We've had nights where we've looked at money shadow. What's going on financially? Let's tell the truth about what's going on with money. The training that I mentioned that I led last week, and the burdens and blessings of leadership, the multicultural topic on that training is classism. And so one of the things we did was an exercise around money shadow and telling the truth about about money. So yeah, we've come up with all kinds of themed nights, and there's no shortage of topics.
That's terrific.
Yeah, one time we went to the, we gathered up a whole bunch of toys and balls, frisbees, baseballs, footballs, sidewalk chalk, all kinds of stuff. And we went down to a local park, and we spent about, I don't know, maybe an hour or so playing, you know, throwing the football around, throwing baseball, doing all kinds of stuff. And then one of the guys in Circle, who was a little bit older than everybody else, took us all out for ice cream. So we walked over to a local place for ice cream, and then we went back to where we met for Circle, and we talked about what was the experience of playing, and where don't we play enough in our life, and how did it, you know, and a lot of guys talked about the feelings and the memories that it brought up around, you know, being taken for ice cream by a male figure, by a masculine figure, whether it was a coach who had taken a team out for ice cream after a baseball game, or, you know, guys who said, well, you know, I don't throw balls around, I don't play baseball or football, and so, you know, they felt, you know, and they described how they felt being, you know, more artistically inclined and having spent time, you know, drawing a picture on the sidewalk, and how that, you know, had, that theme had run through their life, where they felt less than because they were more artistic than athletic. And so there's really no shortage of possible topics for a men's circle.
That's great. Yeah, that definitely makes it exciting from week to week. Now, also in your newsletter, this last newsletter, you referenced Robert Quinn, The Deep Change, Discovering the Leader Within.
Yeah, that's absolutely what I think is the best leadership book that I've found. My mentor, John Gaughan, happens to disagree with me. He thinks that Change the World, one of Robert Quinn's other books, is the best one. So we agree that Robert Quinn writes some of the best leadership books. We just disagree about which one is the best. Quinn talks about deep change, this moment where we come to a decision point where what we're being called to is deep change. And if I remain where I am, I'm going to experience a slow, painful death. And if I go towards deep change, what I'm going towards is the hero's journey. And he calls that process deep change, going through the hero's journey, transformation. You know, so moving from one way of being to another. And if I resist that, if I fail to do that, if I remain as I am, I go through a slow, painful death process. And I'd much rather go through the pain of change and growth than slow, painful death.
I agree. Well, that's what I was going to ask you, is how have you discovered deep change having an effect on your life? Maybe give an example.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really right in the throes of it right now. Reflection in my life, I was living in Chicago in my 20s. My roommate and I spent a ton of time talking about cooking, collecting cookbooks. We talked about going to culinary school, but we had these brand new master's degrees in international business, and really the calling of culinary was so deep in shadow for us. We couldn't even really make a conscious choice around whether going to culinary school would be good for us or not, what we wanted to do. Stuff from our families of origin, expectations. This was a while ago. Cooks and chefs weren't the rock stars that they are today. And so I didn't go. And on reflection of my life, I probably should have gone to culinary school. And so now where I am, I have a deep, deep love and appreciation for craft cocktails and pre-prohibition craft cocktails and the art of bartending and making those. And so I've decided to give over a portion of my life to pursuing becoming a craft cocktail bartender professionally. And so I'm completely starting over. I don't know where I'll end up starting out, but it certainly isn't going to be a launch to the top. I'm probably going to work as a server or a bar back and get better grounded into the hospitality industry, into the craft and the knowledge and the learning. And so I'm going to go through a reinvention there. And I'm concerned about ageism. Am I too old to do this? The bar in a bar and restaurant industry is stereotypically, and maybe not even stereotypically, is inhabited by a lot of people who are in the non-dominant culture. So, you know, people of color, people with lower economic means, people who are in the LGBTQ community, people who are countercultural, and will they accept me as a largely dominant culture man? You know, will they accept me? Can I be accepted into that? So I've got all kinds of fear and trepidation and worries, and I'm right smack dab in the middle of this. I had a job interview on Wednesday. I just learned an hour ago that I didn't get the job. And so, you know, going through that process of, you know, going knocking on doors and handing in resumes and filling out applications. And it's been a while since I've undone that. So that is my own personal deep change at the moment.
No, it's a big risk.
It is.
Yeah. Well, we're winding down with time here. Before we depart, Matt, I'd like you to refresh everybody on the how they can get into a workshop a hero journey. Is there a website they can go to? Who can they connect with?
Yeah, absolutely. So probably the best way to find out more about the Mankind Project and the New Warrior Training Adventure and how that can lead into leadership trainings is to go to mkpusa.org. So that stands for the Mankind Project USA. So mkpusa.org is the center point of all the stuff on the internet for what the Mankind Project does, describes who we are, what we do, how to contact us, how to sign up for the New Warrior Training Adventure. They happen about 80 times a year all across the United States and around the world, from South Africa to Europe to Australia, New Zealand, Israel, Canada, Mexico, into the Nordic. All over the world and all over the United States. And so, it's a great opportunity for to join more than 65,000 men who've done the New Warrior Training and Adventure, and tens of thousands who are sitting in circle every week.
Matt, this has been an enjoyable conversation. I really, really am grateful that you were willing to come on and share your experiences and touch on some subjects that we haven't heard yet on the radio station. So I thank you from the bottom of my heart.
My pleasure, Jim. I really appreciate it. I appreciate your thoughtful questions and the invitation to join you. And anytime you want to chat, just reach out.
Oh, fantastic. Well, may you be blessed.
Thank you. You too.
All right.
All right. Take care.